Thank you to everyone out there that is helping to support the FitCast through patreon.com/thefitcast or by making a one-time donation at thefitcast.com by clicking on that PayPal tab on the left-hand side. You guys are really helping to keep the show going strong into the future and making sure that these episodes are coming to you on a weekly basis. So again, if you enjoy the show, if you get a lot out of this content, please back it up by supporting it on Patreon or through thefitcast.com on that PayPal tab. Thanks so much, and I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 309. I am Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to finally have on the show Jill Coleman of JillFit.com. Jill, how you doing?
Hey, Kevin. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, we're talking off the air a little bit that I have this crazy, like, long list of people that I've been wanting to get on the show, and it's like I've been finally getting a little bit more proactive in getting my stuff together to make sure that I'm getting to these people that I want to talk to. So, yeah, thank you for taking the time. We got some really cool stuff to talk about. And first off, like, I've been asking a lot of people this lately, just for the audience sake. I'm always really interested as why, you know, people in our industry get into our industry. So I was just wondering, like, what got you, you know, to doing what you're doing today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for that question. I think for me, I've always had a love for fitness. I actually fell in love with fitness, got my first job at a gym at the age of 15, always obviously did sports and things like that. And I got a job at the nursery of my local gym, mom and pop place, just so I could get a free membership and go to the fitness classes. And I kind of fell in love with like things like step aerobics and group cycling and, you know, a lot of different aerobics type classes, dance stuff and things like that. And then I ended up just kind of meandering down to the weight room, and I didn't know what I was doing, but I remember being 16, and you know, 16-year-olds, both men and women, are very high, like very anabolic. So I remember 6 months later, you know, I just had these delts on me and these traps, and it was just really kind of cool to see at that age being able to change your body, you know, someone who's that young being able to kind of change their body. And it was really fun. And I kind of fell in love with it and went to school for exercise science and then went on to get my master's in nutrition. And then started competing, was a fitness competitor for several years and fitness model, and kind of did a lot of that. And I kind of got to the point that it was a kind of a very hardcore approach I was taking with exercise and nutrition and being very, very strict on calories and following these meal plans. And my workouts were 2-3 hours long and kind of getting a little crazy with it. And so now I've come out on the other side of that. I don't compete anymore. And what I do, I started JillFit right after I stopped competing, JillFit.com. And it's kind of taken a different form. We have about 500 blogs on there now, but it's everything from nutrition and exercise to also mindset, lifestyle, even business stuff, to kind of live what we call a lean lifestyle, but also to be sane and to be stress-free. So that's kind of, you know, we talk a lot about mindset and stuff, and that's my personal passion, having kind of gone through the kind of craziness of the dieting industry and the yo-yo back and forth and all of that, and now kind of just enjoying the effortlessness of a healthy lifestyle.
I got to guess that the you know, your mindset while competing and doing all that stuff is going to be rather different to today. While you're still in great shape, you know, it's a whole nother level when you're like on that level of competing, right?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, and here's the thing, like, I think competitors, I completely admire what it takes, the kind of dedication and the kind of commitment that it takes, because it really takes a lot of sacrifice. And the girls who are, and the men who are at the very top will tell you it becomes your life. And it did for me for several years as well. And that mentality is, you know, I'll do anything to win. It's very much like, I need to be leaner. I need to have more muscle. And so it's kind of a never ending. It can become a trap if you don't really get your mind right. And so, for me, I was really in that mentality, and it got to the point where I would gain 5 pounds or 10 pounds after my show and still be, you know, in the top 1% of, you know, body composition for women, mm-hmm. but felt fat, you know, but because the perception was that I wasn't as lean as I could have been. And I wasn't as, you know, small or whatever it was that I did when I was competing. And so again, I think that lifestyle is amazing and I admire it, but it really is a sacrifice. And you really have got to be completely focused on that if that's what your goal is. I mean, and things like relationships and your social life and, you know, building a business, they kind of all go on the back burner if you're going to focus on your physique with that much effort and intensity. And again, it's admirable, but it also realizes there's a lot of sacrifices too.
Yeah, it seems like that's a hard thing to wrap your head around when whether it's just someone who is rather fit, but they're never going to look like, you know, the cover model or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they're always, you know, basically leveling themselves against, you know, someone that is on a cover and not just like, you know, general population where you're doing great, you're kicking ass. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to mm-hmm. necessarily be 6% body fat. And that's one of the things that, I mean, I've talked about on the show, but for me personally, it's always weird because I work in it at Mike Ball Strength and Conditioning where everyone's in great shape.
Yeah.
So you're always kind of like measuring yourself mm-hmm. up against the staff. And then also, you know, obviously the athletes that we got coming in there.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's the thing, right? It's, you know, comparing yourself and being in competition with other people in terms of your physique is a trap, right? Yeah. I mean, isn't it? It's like something, it's a game we can kind of never win because there's always going to be someone out there who has more muscle, who ends up being leaner, who, you know, and it's really interesting. And I tell this to my coaching clients all the time when they kind of get down on their physique and they're like, oh, I have cellulite and muffin top and all this stuff. Honestly, what it comes down to for, I think, a lot of women is confidence. Mm-hmm. And you can be confident without having to lose 10 pounds. Like to me, you just jump right to that. And I've seen, especially in the fitness industry and the competitor world, I know a lot of girls who are, you know, 10, 12% body fat, super lean and still miserable with their bodies. Mm-hmm. You know, they're getting up on stage and they're winning shows and they're still dissatisfied and they're also not confident. You know what I mean? They're not making an impact in the world. And then I know, on the other hand, I know women who are overweight, who are making a huge impact in their business, in their life, in their relationships and loving who they are. So I really don't think it has anything to do with a number. And I think that's a really hard lesson for us as women to learn. And I don't know, I'm sure for men the same way, but it just takes time and practice and giving yourself, I think, the benefit of the doubt and having perspective. Like you said, that competition lifestyle and that comparison is a game you can never win.
Do you think that mindset for the, you know, physique competitors and mm-hmm. bodybuilders is like necessary to constantly hate what they're looking at? Like, all I'm going off of is like, you know, pumping iron and just hearing those guys saying like, you have, like Arnold saying, you have to hate how you look when you look in the mirror because you always want to get better.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love pumping iron so much. I watched that for the first time when I was like 18. It was a blast, but, you know, here's the, I don't think you have to necessarily. And I think if you ask some of the top, you know, girls who are winning the Olympia and winning the Arnold Classic and they're winning these shows over and over again, they'll tell you that they love their lifestyle. So for them, it's not a hardship. And I think you have to get to that point mentally that you actually love it. I don't think that you can actually hate your physique to leanness. Does that make sense? Like, I don't think you can be mm-hmm. like, I hate my body to, you know, to really get there. Otherwise you're, you know, that's an eating disorder type thing. Exactly. So I think these girls will tell you that they enjoy it to the and they realize they made a conscious choice to put things like their, you know, maybe their relationships or their business or like, you know, whatever kind of other focuses they have in their life, they've kind of put them on the back burner for this. And so I think you have to actually love your body in order to get to that level. So, but in between where I was, which was competing at the regional level, like that's kind of where, you know, and I did well in regionals, but it was like, that was the kind of in between where you don't fully commit to it and you don't fully love it, but you feel like you need it in order to stay lean. I guess, you know, I think a lot of girls think if they just do a show, that's like a weight loss system. And that's not a weight loss strategy. Doing a competition is not mm-hmm. a long-term weight loss strategy. It's so different. And so I think you have to either fully commit or, you know, again, just be like, it's fine and do your best.
This is interesting. I you know, just staying on the subject for a second and,
sure.
You know,
I love it.
Not even talking about like, we won't even talk about CrossFit in general, whether you like it or not, but they're, you know, with these CrossFit competitions being televised on ESPN and stuff these days, you know, just speaking females in general, mm-hmm. you're seeing more, you know, females with more, you know, lean muscle mass on them and stuff like that. So I was just curious, are you seeing, you know, more clients come to you asking for that look? Because I remember, I mean, it's still today, but in the past, like, one of the things that we still see it at our facility too, like women will come in and say, I don't want muscle. I just want to be lean. I want to look like insert celebrity name. And I just want to make sure I'm not lifting anything heavy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think that muscle on a woman is an acquired taste. I don't think that there's any kind of one way about it. And it's really interesting. Do you know Valerie Waters? She might've been on your, she might've come on the FitCast before, but she is a celebrity trainer in LA and she's a friend of mine and she is very successful at what she does, which is getting a lot of these celebrities in shape. And she said they come to her and they have a goal. And as her trainer, she doesn't try to convince them to be anything that they don't want to be.
Exactly.
So I think that we have a lot of trainers in the industry who just try and push this very muscular look on women because we think that it looks good. And I mm-hmm. think it's amazing. I look at the cover of Oxygen magazine and I'm like, I love that physique is what I personally like. But I think any woman deserves the right to work towards the body that she wants to. Yeah. And I think a lot of that includes nutrition, right? So I look at someone like CrossFit, and to me, I love the awareness that CrossFit is bringing. Personally, I don't really know that much about it. I've done it a few times and I think it's fine. I don't really have an opinion either way in terms of like the safety. We can get into all that. But honestly, I love the awareness that it's bringing to athleticism just in general. But you do look at those physiques, and you know what's interesting is a lot of the physiques look the exact same, don't they? Like, mm-hmm. so you see these women, and it's so does the sport create the body, or are these girls good at the sport because they just genetically are kind of predisposed to do these types of exercises? So I think you can look at it both ways. And for me, I think it's all good. But again, I don't know. I think it's just whatever you're familiar with. It's funny. When I was competing, I really loved the rip look. I loved like women with a six pack and I mean an eight pack and striations and veins and stuff like that. I really liked that look personally. And now that I'm kind of more into like the mainstream, I just have backed off a little bit. I like a little bit softer look, I like a little bit more feminine, you know, so it really is an acquired taste. And it depends, I think, on where you are in your particular journey. So I think it changes over time, if that makes sense.
Totally. And yeah, shout out to Val. Just saw her in Long Beach a couple of weeks ago at the Perform Better. So let's, man, I feel like hijacked the start of the conversation.
No, we can go anytime. Anywhere.
All right. So, you know, with the, I don't even know where I want to go next. All right. So let's go to some of the stuff that we got questions about first, and then we'll kind of jump around just so we get some of the stuff the audience wanted to talk about too. I'm being a little selfish to start the show, but you know, we had some people asking about your circuits that you developed and stuff like that. And one of the things that, you know, people love to do is like at the end of a training session, or even if you're just short on time, you know, put together a circuit that's just going to get that heart rate up and it's going to allow you to do some cool stuff. So, you know, off the top of your head, are there any like specific circuits like you like to throw in, or you know, even tools that you like to make sure that you're using for these circuits?
Yeah, I think it really depends. I come from a bodybuilding background. So for me, it was always about more isolated movements. You know, Monday was chest and tries, Tuesday was legs, you know, Thursday back and buys, Friday shoulders, and whatever kind of, you know, talking about pumping iron, right? If you want to add delts, you got to like, you know, you go to side raises and you go to front raises and things like that. It's kind of building a body. And I like the idea of that. And I always kind of go back to that. And I've had really good, experience with maintaining my muscle as I've gotten older, doing those types of workouts, not necessarily adding that much because my workouts are fairly short. But I do think that I do love metabolic conditioning. I definitely give a shout out to Jen Sinclair's Lift Weights Faster program, which I've had the pleasure of contributing to. And I think it's an amazing program. And all the workouts are 30 minutes or less, because I think the idea that we need these kind of two hour long workouts, it's just old school. I think that you can get the benefit of having a shorter workout. I think you can still get the same benefits from going a little bit shorter. And one thing I love about shorter workouts in general, my workouts are always 30 minutes or less, is that it does kind of curb my appetite and cravings. I think that's really important, because coming from, again, getting ready for the stage, doing 2-3 hours of cardio every single day, it was kind of all I could do to not eat everything in my house. So there's a direct relationship between volume of exercise and appetite and cravings, based on just the stress factor and all of that. So, always keep things short. I like hybrid movements as well. So I like Metabolic Effect. I'm a founding member of metaboliceffect.com, which is a, fat loss, natural health, company at metaboliceffect.com. And our workouts there are work around hybrid movements, like a squat with a shoulder press and a lunge with a curl and a push-up in a row, and doing super simple circuits, 20 minutes, as many rounds as possible in 20 minutes with 4 exercises. And it's a full body workout. So there's a ton of examples of those types of workouts at my website, and also Metabolic Effect, if people are interested. And again, pick up Lift Weights Faster for like, literally there's probably like 130 workouts on there. So it's a great resource.
Absolutely. Yeah. Great stuff from Jen too. Let's talk about the volume stuff for a second, because that's, I think, one of the things that people don't really discuss too much, or maybe not even think a lot about. A lot of people are looking for, you know, program design help or what that next program is. And at the same time, you have like two camps. Like you have camps, you know, of people that are super hardcore that are like, all right, I don't care. I'm going to budget the time for 5 days a week in the gym. So, you know, for those people, they can definitely, you know, turn down the volume a little bit. But, you know, there's some people out there that only got, you know, 2 to 3 days a week in the gym and trying to, you know, maximize that time, but also, you know, dial in the volume and try to figure out, you know, really, you know, what's the minimum effective dosage that you need to get to where you need to go. So I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on that, just for, you know, the people that are hitting up the gym 2 to 3 times a week. How do you like to program for them?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I really think, and I, to your point about coming to the gym for an hour 5 days a week, I tend to think about that approach as kind of building a body. Like, so if you're going to be weightlifting for an hour a day, 5 or 6 days a week, you're going to have a much different looking physique than someone who hits the gym 2 to 3 times a week. So I think the goals are different. So for someone who says, you know what, I only have 30 minutes 3 times a week, I say that's perfect, but we're probably not going to be able to get you up on stage with that kind of regimen. Instead, if the focus is on fat loss, that is completely sufficient. And muscle maintenance, that is completely sufficient. And the majority of the work, of course, happens in the kitchen through nutrition, but it's a different type of approach. So if you want to add muscle and you want to add curves and you want to add striations and really, you know, you have to do a higher level of volume. You have to be in there for a little bit longer. You have to slow down the movements. You have to isolate a little bit more. But for someone who just wants muscle maintenance and maybe fat loss, 3 times a week, full body, circuits for 20 to 30 minutes will be perfect, and it will keep you in shape cardiovascularly as well. But I don't think in general exercise is a great weight loss tool. I deal with a lot of, you know, fat loss and women and hormonal stuff. I don't really recommend a lot of exercise for fat loss, more so nutrition, of course, but just muscle maintenance and mood enhancement and all of that kind of stuff.
Sorry, people know on the show I have to mute myself sometimes because there's like 18 wheelers driving by my house. So I any delay, that is why.
No problem.
All right, cool. So let's jump back onto the mindset for a little bit, and just like advice that you have for people who are, you know, they have goals that they're trying to reach and stuff like that, and you know, just the idea of staying positive, or how to stay positive when you're trying to reach those goals when you're not always seeing progress, or maybe even some advice for people out there who, you know, are like me, who are always looking for immediate results. They have, they don't have any patience in life.
Yeah, that's funny you said that, because that's exactly where you were going with the question. I was like, patience is really actually the answer. You know, I think it all comes down to, when I talk about mindset, I like to think about, you know, it seems very like esoteric and kind of vague and stuff. But for me, mindset is the thing that bridges the gap between kind of knowing what to do and being able to actually do it and implement it. And it's how you end up thinking about the process. In other words, your mindset is your perception. So if your perception is that if I just eat this food and I do this workout, I'm going to get this result, that's a very A plus B equals C approach. And I think you're going to be disappointed. And I think most people have been. So a lot of people probably are listening, have done different diets and 30-day challenges and 90-day, you know, competition preps and 7-day detox and all this stuff. And, you know, that's mostly my audience at JillFit are women who have yo-yo dieted up and down. And I think you get into the trap of thinking that fat loss or muscle gain or whatever it is, whatever the goal is very linear and predictable. And it's just not. So for example, you know, you might, we have an initial weight loss. Once you start a new plan or you start a new approach, you might get that, you know, 3 to 5 pound weight loss within the first 10 days, which is amazing. And I think that that does motivate people to keep going. The problem is that it doesn't keep up. So for example, you're 3 weeks in and now the scale's not moving. And it's really easy, for whatever reason in our industry, it's really easy to get discouraged by not continuing to get predictable results. And I think that's a trap. And that's why we have people who do these things for 3 to 4 weeks and then end up giving them up, because it's one slip or it's one kind of, we have very, very little resiliency when it comes to sticking with a plan. We always laugh at JillFit that most people are looking for a plan, not actually doing one. So you actually don't know if it's going to work if you don't give it enough time. And a lot of what will work comes down to trial and error. And I hate to say that, because that people don't like that, right? We want certainty. We want to give me the plan. I come to you as a trainer and I say, Kevin, I'll do anything. I'll give you any amount of money. Just tell me what to eat, right? People always say that. And we can give them fat loss meal plans all day long, But if it's not created for them with their metabolism and their unique psychological sensitivities and their individual personal preferences in mind, they're not going to be able to do it. And then it's just one more thing that didn't work. And so now we're piling up all these failures. And so, of course, they're never going to think. So it is a mindset. It is a belief system. But you have to wrap your mind around the fact that if you want sustainable fat loss, you have got to dig your heels in and you have to be resilient and you have to be consistent. And I don't care if you're consistent with one thing. Just do that. Just eat breakfast with protein in 30 grams. Like, just be consistent with one thing, because you can always layer on stuff later, but you have to get some wins under your belt. And that takes some time and some trial and error as well. So it's a complete mindset shift, and it all comes down to your perception. And so practice. I mean, really, you have to practice makes progress. You can't know what the formula is going to be from the get-go.
How important do you think like the community aspect or the, what is the way to put this? Like, you know, social part of, you know, goal setting, like whether it's sharing it with friends and or even Facebook or something like that, or a forum or something like that. Do you think that can play a big role? Is that a powerful thing for people?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that speaks to the success of group fitness classes. And of course, CrossFit does this like no other. I mean, as a business person, now having my own business, I look at CrossFit, you know, and I'm like, I'm kind of looking at how they do the business and the back end and stuff, because I'm kind of fascinated with that they've created this kind of inner circle kind of club type atmosphere. And that's why group fitness classes like Zumba and stuff, you know, I mean, we get attached to our identity as someone who does Zumba. And so I think online communities, whether it's Facebook groups or forums or like just telling your friends you're doing something, I think can be motivation at least at the beginning. And for a lot of people, for example, if you decide to do a triathlon or you decide to do a half marathon, you have these goal setting things that you do, and it keeps you accountable for a specific amount of time. I think the problem with any kind of extrinsic motivation, like a weight loss challenge at work, or you know, you're doing something with your friend and it lasts 12 weeks, like any sort of external motivation will wane eventually. So again, people go to CrossFit and you don't see people doing CrossFit for 20 years. I mean, I don't even think it's been in business for 20 years, but you see them doing it for a few years and then going on to the next thing. And I think that's a perfect system. But I do think that at some point you have to have some sort of intrinsic motivation or intrinsic inspiration that's going to keep you moving forward. And I think that comes down to just owning the fact that you are someone who's lean and healthy. Like, I think that it comes down to the as if principle. I don't know if you've heard, and for your listeners, the book is called The As If Principle. And I can't I can't remember right now who wrote it, but essentially what that says is if you want to be something, you have to act it. You can't just think yourself lean. You have to actually just act as if you're already that person. And so I think a lot of it comes down to just regardless of whether you have a community, whether you have people supporting you or not, whether you have an online forum to talk to people, you have to generate that kind of intrinsic inspiration at some point. And I think that comes with time and practice and introspection and all of those things. So again, extrinsic motivation I think is helpful at the beginning, but eventually you need to move towards someone who doesn't constantly need that, because I think it can be a trap as well.
Congratulations. You got me to buy a book. Damn. All right. So
it's really good.
This happens if you like all psychology. The time. I do. I mean, we talked a little before, but like I said, I think people, we got a pretty good idea of how to, you know, get people fit, whether it's in the gym or, you know, how to help them with their nutrition and stuff like that. There's little factors here and there, but for me, it's just like, man, what the hell do we have to do to get people to do what we need them to do to get to where they want to go?
Yeah, you know, and I think that's the difference between someone who's like what I would consider a really good coach versus not, because, you know, Kevin, you and I have been in the industry long enough to see that these, you know, meal plans and everything that's out there, even the workout programs, they're not all that dissimilar, right? I mean, totally. They're pretty much the same. Like, you can Google weight loss meal plan right now and get a million results for free. So the idea that some coach or some expert or some, you know, has some sort of special magic meal plan is just bad coaching. It's just not being able to create a meal plan is not a skill. What is a skill is what you said, which is coaching someone to success. So I can give someone a meal plan all day long, but if I can't form that relationship and get them to change their mindset and see things a different way and change their perception, then they're not going to be able to implement. And that's where coaching comes in. So the meal plan is not the skill. The skill is actually coaching to success. And that takes you know, approaches and time and introspection and reading books and having insight and doing education and all of that stuff, and also being empathetic. I think people need to know that they're, that someone gets them and that they can relate to someone. I think the best coaches are the ones who say, you know what, I've struggled too. I think that's a big piece of it as well.
One of the things I wanted to hit on was a post that you had on JillFit.com a little while back.
Sure.
Six simple ways to create time to get lean, because there's, 99 things that people will make up for in terms of like excuses for not being able to get to where they want to go. And almost always at the top is, you know, I don't have enough time to train. I don't have enough time to make meals. I don't have enough time to, you know, do whatever. I don't have enough time to do all this laundry from going to the gym and all that crap.
Yep. Exactly.
So I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about that, because I still think like that is one of the things that we need to do is just like eliminate all possible excuses.
Yeah, of course. And again, it's a mindset, isn't it? So I always say that if you're constantly saying you have no time, well, you'll definitely have no time, because it's your belief system about your time. Everyone has the same 24 hours. You've heard this before. So I think a lot of what it comes down to is your belief system about it. So if you're hearing, if you're listening to this and you're hearing Kevin say, well, people use time as an excuse, and you're already saying, but Kevin doesn't know, I really don't have time. Like if you're still pushing that agenda and you're still like being that like victim of your schedule, you're never going to get a leg up. It's all comes down to a belief system. You have to actually believe that you can create time if you just get strategic. And so the ways I've used in the past to get strategic are, obviously simple things like shorter workouts. One thing that I, more efficient workouts, like you said, what's that minimum effective dose? And then for me, one of the things that I do is I hate to cook and clean. I mean, I absolutely hate it. I have not prepped food on a Sunday in probably 5 years since I stopped competing. And so people always ask, you know, how do you do that? You always hear you have to, you know, buy all your food and take a couple hours every Sunday and make all the stuff and have these Tupperwares lined up. And here's the thing. The bottom line is if you have food prepped and ready, you're more likely to eat healthy because it's available to you. But if you're someone who absolutely hates it, one of the things is don't force yourself to do stuff that you hate, but you have to find workarounds. You have to take responsibility for the fact that, number one, I hate to cook. So two, I have to find something else I can do that is just as good, if not better. And so what do? You can have a food delivery service, or you can use takeout, or you can use simple things like protein shakes and, you know, quickie omelets and stuff like that, things that are you can make on the fly, and find workarounds. I think that the first insight is if you don't like to do it, then you won't do it. So for exercise, for example, I think a lot of people don't like to exercise because sometimes it's painful, especially if you're just getting started, right? Like it doesn't feel good. I think for you and I, we love it. We fell in love with it. So we go to the gym and we're like, oh, we get the best feeling. We know that the pain and the effort is worth it in the end. But I think a lot of people don't feel that way, right? They maybe over time they do, but at first it's like it's painful, or they feel like they only will get results if they're in there for an hour and they're killing themselves. So the intermediate step would be to find something that they enjoy doing. So I don't care if it's Zumba. I don't really consider Zumba fat loss exercise, but it is certainly fun exercise. And it's, you know what, it gets you in the gym. So if that's what you love, then by all means do it. Because you know what, you might do Zumba for 6 months and then eventually be like, huh, maybe I'll try this weightlifting class. And then you start doing that class. And then you start to think, well, maybe I'll try these machines out on the floor. And then you get into. And so I think that having that starting place is really key. But again, you have to believe that you can do it. And then you also have to find enjoyment in it. The last thing I would say is getting focused. That's really, really hard, because when we say we don't have time, what we really mean is we're not making time because it's not a priority. And I'm not judging priorities. You know, I mean, I think I don't have any kids, but I know people who have kids. I mean, that's their priority. They're bringing, picking, taking the kids constantly, and they have a lot of more responsibilities. And so it's not to judge it, but it is to say that if your focus is on, you know, creating the family life that you want and making sure that the chores are done and the errands are done, and all of that stuff, and the food is cooked and whatever, then you're probably going to have less time for your training. And just know that and be consciously aware of it, so that when you don't get to the gym all that much, you're not down on yourself. You just go, oh, I made a conscious choice to make sure I got the laundry done and the chores and all of that other stuff. So I think it really is about, because your focus is finite, isn't it? It's your willpower, again, is finite. So you kind of have, I try to think about your willpower as like a kind of a battery, that once you kind of get to the bottom and all of your time is eaten up, you don't have the willpower, the focus to spend on other stuff. So you really have to pick and choose where you put your focus. And if you decide that it can't be on getting to the gym, then that's fine. Do your best with your eating. You know what I mean? You can pick and choose where you, you can pick and choose your battles, if that makes sense.
I have some horrible advice for people, and it's about what you mentioned for, like, you just gotta kind of figure out what you enjoy doing in the gym. And like, I'll go through periods of like 2 to 3 weeks where I'm just like, yeah, you know, I probably should do these like full body workouts, but I'll be like, all right, you know what? I'm going to spend 15 minutes and I'm going to make sure I do my homework. And like, I like to go in, I'm like the opposite, I guess, of all the other guys in the industry who are like, dude, I'm deadlifting like 600 today. I can't wait to back squat. I'm like, nah, man, that makes my legs sore. And I got to sit at a desk. I got to do some work and I got to like, I have like a standing desk. So my legs, you know, I'll do, you know, one or two really heavy load lower body exercises per training session. Then like the other 65-70%, it's like upper body stuff because I enjoy doing that more. I recover a lot faster and, you know, still like do my homework, like do the work that I need to get done and make sure I'm not all unbalanced and stuff. But, you know, for me, like these days, it's just like I just want to go in and lift some heavy stuff, do a little bit of lower body, do a lot of upper body, just because that's what, you know, that's what's fun for me these days. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and that comes back to like the empathy piece, right? Like, I don't know that there's a right way. I think it's the way that works for you. So I think a little bit of empathy goes a long way. And my whole thing is, any choice is fine. Just be aware of it. So for example, if you're like, I don't really do that much lower body because I don't enjoy it, then don't complain that your legs aren't growing. You know what I mean? Totally. I think that's really the bottom line, is just be consciously aware of it. So if you're stressed out that you're not getting leaner and you're not, you know, take responsibility for the fact that your priorities haven't been, you know, eating clean. You know what I mean? So I think it really is just, and there's no, again, there's no judgment about it. It's just about being consciously aware of it and then being okay with it once you kind of know what your approach is. I'm not going to ever have the biggest legs in the gym. Okay, that's fine. I'm fine with that.
Totally. Yeah. Like, it's just for me, it's like, man, I'm going to set up a new chin-up goal today. And I'm going to set up like a, you know, new, I can't really bench much anymore from tearing my pec so goddamn much, but I'll do like a, you know, just set like a new, like single arm dumbbell row PR today. Like, that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, again, that's what works for me. That's what I'm just trying to say is, you know, find out whatever you need to do. If you're not going to the gym, find out what gets your butt through those doors and, you know, moving.
I think that's a really, I think that's a trap that we see a lot in our industry, is we go, the best exercise is this. And like we, and then we take everybody who's reading our stuff and we tell them that if they're not doing like these Metcon, like crazy workouts for an hour, that they're not going to get results. And that's why people don't feel like if they go to the gym for 20 minutes that they can get anything out of it. So I think we kind of do people sometimes a disservice by making it all about there's only one way. To me, there are better ways. For example, if you're, you know, if you want fat loss, then yeah, probably metabolic conditioning is going to be better than Zumba. But again, it is, I think we do people a disservice when we say that certain types of activity are bad and other ones are good and you have to do this or else you might as well not even go. And I think a lot of consumers and a lot of people who are kind of doing these program jumping things are getting caught in the crossfires, and that's why they feel, I think that's why they feel unmotivated or they feel discouraged or they feel like a failure, because they're, it seems to be like go hard or go home. And I think that that's just not the way that real change works.
All right. So let's jump around a little bit and again, go to some more questions from the listeners, because I keep hijacking this stuff again. All right, so we had a question from Facebook from Melinda. I have clients that are seemingly doing everything metabolic effects suggest for fat loss, but there's no to very little movement on inbound analysis or in-body analysis. What direction and encouragement can I give them? So I guess people that are getting stuck.
Yep. Yeah, that's a really tough thing, right? I think we deal with this personally. And then, of course, as a professional, we deal with, I kind of think about coaching as kind of personality management, pretty much like ongoing. And I think if you're a coach, you have to know that that comes with the territory. I think the people who are the best coaches, again, can put themselves in their clients' shoes and they have empathy. I think the worst coaches are the ones who have, it's a my way or the highway, or they don't listen to their clients, or they get frustrated with their clients. That's just really bad coaching. So again, being patient with your clients, and because we all know, I mean, people have their own frustrations and everyone's different. And especially if they feel like their life is suffering in misery and they're not getting results, they're going to be kind of cranky with you, right? As a coach. So I think the best, what I would say is always comes back to reiterating the idea that you have got to be patient, and that fat loss is not It's not, there's not just one way. It's troubleshooting ongoing. So at Metabolic Effect, for example, we say you don't find your fat loss formula. You create your own fat loss formula based on your unique metabolism, your personal preferences, or your psychological sensitivity. So for example, with Melinda's clients, they could be doing quote everything right, but they're obviously not doing everything right because they're not getting results. So they're not doing everything right for them. And so as a coach, I would go back to, we need to continue to see what's working and what's not. Okay, so we have a baseline. How are your hunger, energy, and cravings? Are they balanced? Because I don't think that you can lose weight sustainably if your hunger is high, your cravings are high, and your energy is unstable. So at Metabolic Effect, we always balance hunger, energy, and cravings first before we even look at fat loss or weight loss. So where is your hunger, where are your cravings, and where is your energy stability? And once those things are balanced, then you can start playing around a little bit. So the way that we generally start people getting balanced in that way is increasing protein, increasing fibrous vegetables, and then looking at the carbohydrate tipping point or the amount of carb and the right carbs for them. And so this, obviously, you can tell, takes time. This is takes practice, time, and watching and seeing and doing one new behavior at a time and then recording and observing. And so this, as a coach, I would from the get-go set up my clients to realize that if they want rapid results, then I'm probably not the coach for them. So I always try, again, personality management, expectation management, ongoing, and that the people who are the most successful are the ones who are the most consistent. They're not the most consistently perfect, but they're the most consistent. So if they can commit to 3 times a week at the gym, just commit to that. You have this baseline of nutrition where you're at right now. You're not getting results. Let's change one single thing and then watch and see what happens. Give it 2 to 3 weeks, monitor your hunger, energy, and cravings, and measure results 2 to 3 weeks later. And then if that's not quite it, then we adjust one more thing. So what I find in general with nutrition is that, you know, obviously high vegetable diet first, high protein diet second, and then carbohydrates and dietary fats seem to be the two variables. So they require a lot of playing around as a coach. And as a good coach, they will take their client and help them understand that there's some time there and some patience that's required and some consistency. And so again, I do think it comes down to expectation management. So in terms of motivation, I think the best thing you can do is tell your clients that they're perfect where they are and that you have their back and that you have their, but that you're with them and that it's not going to be instantaneous. It's not going to be a 30-day, you know, I lose 30 pounds and I keep it off forever. That's just old school. So it really comes down to expectation management and just being in their corner and realizing that getting them to see that if they want real results, it's going to take time and some trial and error. And that's hard. I think that's a hard pill to swallow for a lot of clients because we're used to the rapid results. Mm-hmm. So it is hard. It's coaching.
So, you know, for people who do like hit that plateau and stuff like that, do you like do anything in terms of, you know, like people, I don't know if people just call it like, you know, relax from the diet from a little bit, take a break from the diet and, you know, don't worry about that stuff. Because then I think that's like a slippery slope because then some people can just totally revert back to where they were before they even started this whole thing to, you know, begin with.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. So if I have someone who's at a plateau, I will ask them how their hunger and cravings and energy are. So I always start there. And if they're balanced and they feel like the way they're eating and exercising is fairly sustainable. So we actually have a lot of people like that. They go, you know what? I like the way I eat and it's not hard for me. And then they also say, my exercise, I enjoy my exercise. I go and I hit the gym, you know, 3-4 days a week and I really enjoy it. So I think, so if all of that is fairly sustainable, but they're not getting results, I will look at, first and foremost, I will look at stress. And I think that we're coming to find out in the industry that stress is playing a much larger role than we ever thought possible. I remember for me, I used to poo-poo it. I was just like, stress, like what? I mean, it seemed like so like something your grandmother should worry about. Like it didn't really feel like all that useful to me. But I think what we're seeing now is that there's obviously two kinds of stress, right? There's emotional stress, which is in the head, and then there's physical stress, which is in the body. And that can be from excess cardio. That can be from going long periods without eating. That can be from You know, not eating frequently enough, not eating enough carbohydrates. Like, there's so many different ways that the body can feel stress. So you don't have to feel stress in your head for your body to be under stress. And your body responds the same way, whether it's emotional stress or physical stress. And so what I usually have people do is not necessarily take a break from the diet, but maybe back off a little bit on the exercise piece. And naturally, hopefully, they will also back off on their food volume. So I always try and match the exercise volume to the food volume. So if they are under a lot of stress in their physique, because we're seeing a lot more with metabolic damage and adrenal fatigue and all this kind of stuff in our industry, so cutting back on the amount of exercise they're doing, they're going to have to cut back on the volume of food that they're eating as well. And so they move to this more restorative approach, which is maybe doing things like leisure walking more instead of hitting the gym for CrossFit 6 days a week, you know, and maybe doing leisure walking, maybe doing more meditation, maybe light stretching, light, you know, more restorative yoga, meditation, things like that, foam rolling, you know, I mean, more things that are considered activity, not so much exercise. And that gives them a little bit of a mental reset, but also a physical reset as well. And again, you have to match your nutrition to your exercise. So if your volume of exercise goes down, your nutrition volume has to kind of go down too. And usually that's fairly easy because you're not exercising as much. So your cravings and hunger are a little bit lower as well.
Man, this is complicated stuff. I mean, like you're simplifying it, but I mean, it's like, this is the thing that we're just trying to, we need that one more answer, one more thing, and I don't think we're going to find it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I wish I could give you. I mean, I think that's the thing is I really wish there was a kind of a hard and fast rule to all of this. I don't think that there is. I think there's a starting place, but every person is so different that we just don't know exactly how someone is going to respond to something. I get a lot of emails, and I'm sure you do too. I get a lot of emails from women saying, can you just tell me how many carbs to eat?
Yeah.
And like, that's kind of an impossible task, isn't it? It's like, I can tell you where to start, but then based on how your body responds to that, how your hunger is, your cravings, your energy, your results, based on all of that biofeedback, we change, right? So I don't think any meal plan that I give someone will not look that the same way 12 weeks later. It will always be different based on how they respond. And so again, there isn't a hard and fast rule. The best rule I can give you is become very aware and comfortable of your body. I think a lot of people don't even know that what they put in their mouth affects how they feel, right? They don't even know that it has an impact on their GI system, or that has an impact on their skin and their complexion and their energy and their sleep quality and their stress management. Like, they don't even get that what they put in their body really does affect everything else that's going on. And so I think starting there and really understanding what foods are what you feel best on food-wise, what kind of exercise you feel best on, and that can be emotional, mental, and physically.
I just wish we had an answer. Every time you're hungry, you know, just put on Belle Biv DeVoe's Poison and the hunger goes away. Like, we need to have some sort of like mental key to be able to figure this out. But
that would be amazing. I would love that. And I love Belle Biv DeVoe too. It's so old school.
Who doesn't? Poison. Who doesn't?
I know.
man, that's it. Just pause the show and go listen to that right now. It'll help you increase the mood of your day.
It will. It totally will.
This is another thing I've been asking people, because, you know, when it comes to like getting motivated in the gym and you know, increasing the, effectiveness of your workouts or intensity of your workouts, it has been scientifically proven that, you know, music that you want to listen to has helped, and things like that. So, I've been asking people like what's been on your, you know, shuffle list or your gym playlist or anything like that when it comes to like getting fired up to go lift some weights or, you know, do the cardio stuff.
What a fun question. I've never been asked that in an interview. I'm like super boring. I don't know if you're like this, but you get into your 30s and you kind of like lose touch with what's like good music. I feel like, you know, so I kind of am listening to the same stuff I was listening to, you know, 5 years ago or whatever, but totally. I'm like a dopamine person. I'm very dopamine driven. Like, I need like fast music and I need like beats and all that stuff. So I work out normally, it just depends on my mood, but normally I work out to trance music. I love club music and I love punk rock, like Fall Out Boy and things like that. And I also love hip hop. So you'll probably hear one of three of those things on my iPad at all times.
Have you ever talked or met Tony Gentilcore?
Yeah, I know who he is.
he has the craziest like club mixes. I don't know where he gets some of this stuff, but it is borders on the weird.
Yeah, I love it. I'm like, the harder the better. I love all that stuff.
All right, cool. So yeah, this is more music tips for you guys to jump on iTunes to check some of that stuff out. But yeah, that's, I train middle school kids, like 11, 12, 13 year olds. And like we play at our gym normally, like whatever, it's like today's hits on Pandora. And I'll be like, you guys like this music? Like this is something you would want to put headphones on and listen to while, you know, at your house or something like that. Like I'm 28 and it's already happened. So,
you know, well, once you get into your 30s, then you probably won't be as into music. Maybe, I don't know. I think it's just losing touch with like pop culture and like really, I don't know, not really caring so much. It's that, at least that's my experience. But you know what? It's funny because I think when you're a group fitness instructor too, I was teaching like, you know, a dozen classes a week for many years. You have to stay up on it because you're constantly putting together mixes for spin class and stuff like that. And so you're always finding, and I love this about that, was you're always on top of the most energetic music for exercise, motivational music for exercise. So definitely fast beats and hard beats and stuff like that. And hip hop, just, you just feel kind of hardcore when you're lifting to hip hop. I don't know.
Totally.
Like the more, like the dirtier, the better. I don't know.
Yeah, no, for sure. all right, let's go to some more questions from the listeners. Again, another one from Facebook from Vix. What are good tips to break out of the quote fear of success trap? I have no fear of failure, but having been huge my entire life, and now after losing 100 pounds and being 20 pounds away from my absolute goal, I keep self-destructing and pushing myself further backwards. Mindset needs to adjust.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, congratulations. That's amazing, Vix. That's unbelievable. And the fact that you've kept it off this long, for sure. You know, what's really interesting, I actually wrote a blog post on the fear of success. And one thing that I think is really interesting about the fear of success is that once you kind of reach the thing, that goal, whatever that is, so if it's another 20 pounds, there's more responsibility at that point. So I know, at least as a business owner, right? If I'm a coach, I work with a lot of fitness entrepreneurs who are like, well, I want to put out a program, but I'm just going to put it out for free at first. And I'm like, okay, well, why wouldn't you charge for it? And I think when you get into it, I think a lot of it comes down to, well, if I don't charge for it, I'm not responsible for getting results, right? I'll just give it to some for free. And if they don't get results, well, they can't be mad at me because it's free. So I think the same thing kind of happens when we get to a level of success, there's a higher responsibility. So if you lose that additional 20 pounds, now the responsibility becomes keeping that off, right? The stakes are higher once you're more successful. So I think a lot of times if you hear people who are maybe entrepreneurs or athletes, there's just more pressure at that level. It's 100, you have to take 100% responsibility for everyone, especially when you get to, say you have 20 more pounds to lose, right? And you hit your goal. Now the responsibility becomes not only keeping it off, but you can't really blame anyone if it doesn't work anymore. You know, so I think we kind of keep ourselves back a little bit because we don't want to fully go into that place of ownership. And this is really tricky. And obviously, I think there's a lot of psychology behind it. But I think a lot of it, for me anyway, comes down to, I use a practice called practical pessimism or fear setting. And I learned that from Tim Ferriss, 4-Hour Work Week. And he calls it practical pessimism. And it essentially says, if you're wanting to take action somewhere, go to worst case scenario. Actually mentally go to the worst case scenario. So for Vix, maybe that would be, I lose those 20 pounds and then I gain it all right back, or I gain back 50 pounds. Like mentally go to that space, and that's not a comfortable exercise, is it? It's really not a comfortable place to be. But what you do is you go to that place mentally, and then you say, what's one thing that if that happened, I could do? What's one step or one action item that if that happened, if I lost 20 and then I gained back another 50, what's the worst that can happen? And what's one thing I could do to remedy the situation if that happened? And I think for people who are scared to take action, that's a really powerful exercise, because I think you always get to the point where you realize that if that happened, that you could handle it. Now, would it be fun? No. Would it be painful and uncomfortable and embarrassing or shame or whatever we have these emotions around it? I think it would be, but you could handle it, and you always have a step. And so the potential for failure is there. But if you don't try, then I think people are more comfortable not trying and staying in a place of less than or not reaching their full potential than trying for something else and potentially failing. So we see this a lot at gyms, right? We see women who are maybe running, or people running on the treadmill for you know, hours for years. So maybe they go and they're like, I run 5 miles every single day for 2 years, and their body 2 years later looks exactly the same. and they're still frustrated and they're still not seeing changes, but they aren't willing to change up their routine because they're more comfortable with just doing what they do and failing than trying something new and changing up their routine where there's a potential for failure. And so for me, I always go to that place, and fear of success and fear of failure are two sides of the same coin. I think they're very closely related. But for me, it always comes down to responsibility and then using something like practical pessimism, going to worst case scenario, like mentally going there. And once you do that, you see, you know what, if that happened, it wouldn't be fun, but I could handle it. And so now I know I can take that step. And you have a step, you have an action plan if it did happen.
For people out there, just, you know, as we start getting towards the end, now I just want to ask you, do you have anything, you know, coming up, whether it be, you know, new articles or videos or any lectures coming up that people should keep an eye out for?
Oh man, I wish you did this a couple of months ago. I just launched two new products over in January. In July and in August. So I'm actually done for a little bit. Right now I'm just kind of cruising through the fall. And then I have a year-long mentorship called the Best of You Coaching Club. And this is going to be my fourth year doing it. And I do it for female fitness entrepreneurs who are interested in taking their in-person business as a personal trainer or a group fitness instructor into the online space. So again, I'm going to be launching that December 1st of this year. So the Monday after Thanksgiving weekend. And it's a, like I said, a year-long mentorship. And people can get on the wait list if they just go to the Jillfit Facebook page and click on the header image. There's all the information for Best of You is there, as well as the wait list. And we have a pretty sizable wait list. This year I took 50 girls, and next year I'm probably going to be taking 75. So it is capped because I want to make sure that everyone gets personal attention. Mm-hmm. It's a really, really fun program. And it's a lot of like-minded women who are driven and want to get to the next level with their business, have a passion for exercise or nutrition or health coaching, whatever it is, and want to figure out a way to do what they love and make money and make an impact as well.
Awesome. Super cool.
Yeah.
So, and also I want to quickly mention for everyone out there in terms of, the FitCast, just a heads up that you can, help keep the show going and keep it ad free. And, of course, make sure that, new episodes keep coming on a regular basis. You can go to patreon.com/thefitcast, and there you can start at just $1 per episode. If you enjoy the show, you can just jump on there and contribute $1 per episode towards its production and, keep it going. And of course, Jill, people can get a hold of you on @JillFit on Twitter. And of course it's, JillFit.com, for the website as well, correct?
Yep. So, and also on Facebook, just /JillFit for the, we have a really cool group there who we talk a lot about the psychology of food and exercise and all of that fun stuff. So if you liked mindset work, definitely get on there. We have really fun conversations. So Facebook and then Instagram @JillFit as well.
Awesome. We're going to wrap it up here. And for everyone out there, if you want, you can grab those links at thefitcast.com as well. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the FitCast through iTunes, and you can submit reviews on there if you enjoy the show. And you can follow me at Kevin Larrabee and at FitCast on Twitter. And I think the best thing we should do, or the best thing we could do right now, is to end, and then we all go and listen to some Belle Biv DeVoe and then go do some training. So, Jill, it was great to finally get you on the show, and I definitely look forward to talking to you down the road.
Oh, thanks so much, Kevin. I had a blast. And yes, I will go listen to Poison right now.
Nice.